Comments on Serotalk Tech Chats are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, or third-party resellers. Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft. And welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat 109 for July 14, 2011. Our topic tonight, later we'll be talking about convention highlights from the 2011 ACB and NFB conventions. And I'll be quite honest, it'll lean a little bit more toward NFB other than my presence at ACB. But first, before we even go there, we're going to speak with Jim Gashel of the KNFB Reading Technologies about the release of the Blio Reader for the iOS, which obviously is iPhone, iPad, and I guess also the iPod Touch as well. Is that correct, Jim?
Yeah, that's right, Michael. Nice to be here. Thanks.
Okay, and before I start that with you, I just want to introduce our other guests. Also joining us this evening is Joe Steinkamp, known by
Good evening, everyone.
And we also have Daryl Shandro with BlindAccessJournal.com. Thank you, Daryl, for joining us this evening.
Good evening. It's an honor to be on the show once again. Thank you.
All right. And finally, Steve Sawson with the Assistive Technology Show that you can find at atmaine.com. It's atmaine.com. Thanks for joining us tonight, Steve.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. Well, before we get into NFB and ACB discussions, let's first speak with Jim about the release of Blio for iOS. So, Jim, I guess one of the first questions we had was someone was asking about how you get Blio up and running.
Okay, yeah. Well, and with good reason. Let me just mention that we don't like our login screen, but the rules that Apple has forced all of us into these days, except the existing apps in the App Store, are quite unusual. We can't even say the word books on the login screen, so it's hard to tell what the app is about, actually. But anyway, here's what you do. You can create a Blio account by going to the following URL, and it's on the screen. It's mobile.blioreader.com. You can create an account at that site with your username. That would be an email address that you want to use and the password you want to use. And you can put in your credit card information and you can purchase books on that site. That is the Blio web store. So you can browse for books in the store, over 100,000 books in that store, and you can buy any of those books. When you do, they go to your book vault in the cloud. And when you log into Blio on the iOS device with the same credentials, those books will display. You can't buy books from within the app. And again, that's due to Apple's restrictions. And we could take more than this whole show to discuss all of that. We would like to have been in the App Store 6 months ago and with far less restrictions than we have to abide by. But I guess the good news is we're in the store, and hopefully we'll only get better from here.
Okay, so how do you search for content? You get books, you bring them in.
Yeah, you search for content at the Blio web store, and you can search for books, any of our over 100,000 books in the store. There's a search field. You can put in author, title, the best number of words you can come up with for the book, and hopefully find the book and books you want that way, and then you can make your selections from that, Michael.
So it's just as with other book reading technologies, you can read them on the iOS device, but you have to buy them on your PC or your Mac.
Well, no, you don't have to buy them on your PC or Mac. You can buy them on your mobile device. You simply go to mobile.bleoreader.com, and you can do that through Safari. And so you can shop for books and buy books through Safari. You just can't do it from within our app.
Okay, yeah, right, got you. So you can just use Safari, right, just a separate window on the device.
That's right.
Just not the app, and that's an Apple
That's
thing.
Right. That's you can't do it from within the app.
Okay. So you said you have about 100,000 books. For folks who may want to play around with Bleo, how many free titles are up there right now?
Well, we don't have any free titles in the bookstore. We do provide you with access to free books in Bleo on the PC, and those are Google Books. They're public domain books. Now, you can, through Bleo on your iOS device, go to free book sites, and you can put that content into iTunes and then import it into Bleo on your iOS device. So we do have an import capability, and the content would go in through iTunes, and it'd be content that you would get from any number of free book sites.
Okay, one of the questions we had to do with the navigation of commands to move by word, sentence, or paragraph, or moving forward and backward pages, or auto-scrolling or read to end, if you will. And I guess some of those features aren't there, and there's reasons for it as well, right?
Well, most of them actually are there. First of all, let me just point out that, to my knowledge, I think there are only two ebook readers in the App Store that are accessible. One of them is iBooks, and one of them is Bleo. And I don't know of any others. I've purchased books through Kindle, and I can't read any of them. I've purchased books through Kobo, and I can't read any of them. And I've purchased other books through other ebook readers, and I can't read any of them. So I'd be honored to know if there are others that are more accessible. Now, in regards to navigation, we can navigate by character. You use the rotor for this. So you can navigate by character, by word. We cannot navigate by line. iBooks can navigate by line. We'll investigate how we could navigate by line. Currently, we can't navigate by line. Nobody can navigate by sentence. We can navigate by paragraph. iBooks cannot navigate by paragraph. And, of course, we can all navigate by page. And we all have the
Okay, I'm having break.
We all have a page chooser, so we can quickly go to any other sections of the book. And we all have a search capability to search for words within the book.
Okay, so you're using more of the Apple VoiceOver commands for navigation as opposed to anything that's built specifically into Bleo for that. Is that what I'm understanding?
We're using commands that we developed using all of the VoiceOver capabilities, but obviously we included those in Bleo, whereas Kobo and Kindle and etc. never did do that. So I think people need to understand that VoiceOver doesn't make an app accessible out of the box, that the developers have to do considerable work and intentional work to make the app accessible. And we did that with Bleo. We might eventually do a better job than what we've done, but we did that with Bleo, and I'd like to know if there are other apps that are as accessible as Bleo. Also, I think you would find that Bleo is the best Braille reading app, that is with refreshable Braille displays. iBooks is very kludgy in reading Braille. None of the others will display Braille. We do, and you have full refreshable Braille display access to the text of the book as well as, you know, the functions in the library, etc.
Okay, now some had expressed some concern with the initial screen because it says something to the effect of, I guess before you read your books, you log in and
yeah,
archive
right.
menu or what? There seems to be
confusion. Yeah, well, we don't like the initial screen either. And I pointed out we can't even say the word books on the initial screen or we wouldn't be in the App Store today. We decided to do whatever it took initially to get approved to be in the App Store under Apple's new rules, and then to improve the app from there. So we had no option but to design the interface the way it is, and it's not a good design. It's not certainly not the design we want, but it's a question of we could be sitting here talking about what could be, and we wouldn't be in the App Store for many, many weeks, many months, who knows how long.
Yeah, I think that's important for people to understand. Some of these limitations come from Apple when they ask about Bookshare and now Learning Ally, you know, so that people understand, you know, what's going on.
Well, speaking as the one who's primarily interfaced with Apple on this, it's not easy to get answers, and certainly not easy to get quick answers. And you can't go by their written guidelines because a lot of the rules they apply are not written down. They're making them up as they go along for reading applications.
One of the questions I saw via Twitter is, who tests Bleo for accessibility, the user interface, and documentation?
Well, we have 100 beta testers, and probably 10% of them are blind, 10 to 15% of them are blind. We only get, and this is another Apple restriction, we only get 100 slots of anybody that can be a beta tester. And we were completely filled up on our slots, and we had to actually end up cutting some people out. No blind people that I know of, but cut out people or devices at one point. So again, so we're somewhat constrained on what we can do.
Okay, we'll turn to our panel here, Daryl. Did you have any questions for Jim that we haven't covered thus far?
Yeah, I guess. I totally understand, you know, what you're saying about the language and the dialogue. I just found the experience, you know, when opening the app very, very jarring and very confusing from the perspective of a new user who would not be very technical. And I did a podcast, which will be linked in the show notes, where I kind of took the app at face value, you know, where I would have some iOS knowledge, but not, you know, sort of the inside knowledge about how to navigate some of the things in the app. So, I don't know. I guess I would just ask that you know, kind of look at that a little more. And I would say also that when I was reading, when I double tapped the book page and I was reading the book, there's a Sleepy Hollow and there's Peter Rabbit. There's a couple of free partial books in the app that are apparently built in before you read anything and before you log into anything. And so I did my podcast, my brief run through with those titles. With Sleepy Hollow specifically, and I only saw word and character and heading, which didn't seem to make sense because the book wasn't marked up that way. Maybe you can tell us how to get to some of the other, like the paragraph navigation feature.
Okay, on paragraph, Daryl, what you do is paragraph's not in the rotor. It isn't in the rotor on iBooks either. Word and character are in the rotor on both, okay. and they don't have line in the rotor either. There are limitations within VoiceOver on what you can do there. So both of us are under the same limitations. Right. Now, what we've done in regards to paragraph, which they have not done, is it's a one finger swipe. And you will go from paragraph to paragraph to paragraph to paragraph.
Gotcha.
And you won't do that in iBooks. Now, you know, on the small screen of an iPhone or an iPod Touch, there are a lot of pages where you won't actually find a paragraph because, you know, the lines are short. Probably on an iPad, you'd do better to find a paragraph or two on a single page. Do you follow me here?
But
on many pages you do find paragraphs, or at least I do, using the iPhone. And while we're talking about this, and again it kind of gets down to your point about, you know, we should have better help information. I go in, just think about this. Since you're dealing with a small screen on the iPhone, as an example, or on the iPod Touch, and yet we want to listen to the book in audio. Well, I go in and set the print size to the smallest print size I can set it to. So I get more content on the screen. And therefore, you know, that I'm more likely to have more than one paragraph on even a small screen. So I set it to the smallest print size you can set it. Now, okay. You know, if you wanted to read in large print, that would be another issue. Right. But if you set it to the smallest print size, you're going to get more content.
Okay, that's making sense to me.
Now, someone asked why there was no capability for auto-turning of pages, and then, of course, Joe Steinkamp pointed out before we even began that none of the readers allow that.
Yeah, well, iBooks actually does allow that. You can, if you do a double swipe down, you will transition from page to page to page to page to page. Believe it or not, it's a third-party API that makes that possible, and we don't have access to it. We may in the future, I don't know. But, you know, as we actually got to thinking about this, it's really not an accessibility issue. It's only blind people have been used to, you know, continuous reading. And actually, I'd like to, and we probably will at some point. I don't really know, but if you can see, you've got to interact with your device and you've got to turn the pages as you're done reading them. One of the advantages I found is I don't fall asleep and end up getting 100 pages down the road and having missed out on most of it. So at most, I'm going to miss out on a few words on the page I'm on if I fall asleep. So I kind of view it now as an advantage, whereas in the beginning, I kind of looked at it as a disadvantage, as like the question implies. But in any event, I really don't think it's an accessibility barier.
Well, on that note, I mean, we have to understand that Blio is a mainstream product that has accessibility built in, right? It wasn't built specifically for
But that's right. But we want it to be accessible too. And if, you know, we're not going to hold back on the continuous read thing. If we can implement it, we probably will. But I just want to point out that we shouldn't be dinged on that one, since that's really not an accessibility question.
Right, fair enough. What enhancements do you see for the future of Blio? What do you have on the roadmap for upgrades?
Oh, well, I mean, the biggest one would be we'd like to be able to create your account within Blio. We're not allowed to do that. We would like to be able to buy books from within Blio or link to the bookstore, from within Blio. Those are definitely two things we'd like to do. We'd like most books to be audio books within Blio. That will certainly happen as publishers produce content that are more audio than just visual. You know, publishers are still converting from the era of print books on paper to digital books. But as they do, you're going to find more multimedia content in books. And we're set up to provide multimedia content. Better, I think, than any ebook reader in existence, because our whole system is based on providing a multimedia presentation. So our play button, in addition to providing text-to-speech, will be providing real audio whenever a real audio track is available, and there will be video / audio clips within books. That'll be the future. There will be links to sources out on the internet, to look up more information. That'll be part of the future. All these different things will clearly come.
You say real audio, you don't necessarily mean real audio networks, you mean just...
No, I mean real audio voices.
Yeah. Right, that's what I
thought. Oh, gotcha, okay.
Okay, so now, of those 100,000, how many are audiobooks, or how many might be books that say we want to read stories to our children, so we want to hear the text and be able to show the pictures?
First of all of them are readable with voiceover, and so there's just no question about that, and... I would say that the voiceover voice selections aren't necessarily wonderful, but they're not necessarily horrible. I personally like the Australian female voice, about the best, and so I use that one to read books with, and it works very well. But we do have TTS enabled, And Mike, I would say that TTS is allowed by the publisher slash author on probably 60,000 of the 100,000 books. That number will climb, and of course the number of books in the bookstore will climb, but those are DRM restrictions that we're under that we don't, you know, we don't have a choice about. I mean, we certainly agree with the NFB. There should be no restrictions on text to speech, but it's not something that we control. So you will see more and more of those books allowing text to speech. You will also see vastly improved text to speech quality on iOS devices in probably the not too distant future. And by vastly improved, I mean all virtually human sounding voices. But ours isn't that good yet. It's okay. And what I'm talking about is when you enable the TTS, so you hit the play button and you're not now reading with voiceover, there is a synchronized highlighter that scrolls through the text and highlights each word as the TTS also speaks the word. And, you know, it'd be a perfectly great way to read with children. There's no question about that.
I'd like to pop in here and say that that's important because a lot of people use low vision products such as Magic, Zoom Text, Lunar. They really need that. They still have enough vision to follow along, and so having a frame or a highlight is very important for that kind of situation where somebody might actually – that still has some residual vision is looking at formatting or punctuation. I know when we use screen readers, we don't always think about punctuation. We think about speed and we think about accuracy. But for those who are doing low vision or maybe proofreading, that's really important. So I didn't know that.
It's teaching people to read as well.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. And those of us who are actually blind and we just listen to this stuff, we don't think of it that much. But it's important. There's no other ebook reader that provides this capability, by the way.
Well, before we run out of time, what's going on the PC front? Or I guess someone else had asked if you had an Android version coming out.
Well, we do have an Android version coming out. If you know the date, you know more than I do. I do think it's relatively soon, and you're going to see Blio on Android tablet computers first, and probably a T-Mobile device. I would say be looking for that.
So how will that speak? Will that be self-voicing, or how are you going to make it talk on Android?
Don't get me into details on that one. I wish I could. How about if I come back when we do it, huh?
Okay.
It probably will be self-voicing, but I don't have enough particulars to tell you yet. But it will be accessible. There's no question about that.
Okay. So I want to ask you about the Windows version. I haven't played with that in a while. Now, you call it version 5.0, and I download it, and it says 7530.
Yeah. No, I don't know why the numbers are that way, but I think it's 7530. It's, you know, that's your best accessibility is with JAWS. And then you have partial accessibility with the other screen readers. Our objective is to make Blio screen reader agnostic. It is currently favoring access with JAWS because we wrote JAWS scripts at a time when JAWS was the only screen reader that we could really work with when we started building Blio. That's not the case anymore. We could be accessible with Window Eyes, for example, and the others. But what we want to do is get out of scripts. So rather than doing something which would in effect be a Band-Aid to make Blio accessible with every screen reader under its current approach, we're redeveloping the entire reading view so that scripts won't be needed for any screen reader and it'll be accessible for everybody.
And what about Macintosh?
Don't know, frankly.
Really, because I just saw the sales in the last month. It was the number three seller. 11% of all computers were Macs.
Well, yeah, but you know what? I don't think there is any ebook reader on Mac computers.
Is that true, Steve? Ask our Mac aficionado.
Well, that's about to change. Adobe showed off Adobe Editions, but that's not here yet. I guess as an ebook reader, I can't think of any either, really. Stanza, I think, does work, though. Stanza, I believe, will work. Also, Preview, which opens up PDF and other types of documents, could be considered an ebook reader because it does allow for navigation within the PDF documents, assuming they're marked up correctly, which is, of course, a big assumption. But
and now it does open to your previous place where it didn't used to, right?
Correct,
right,
yeah.
So, okay.
But I don't know, in terms of ebook readers as such, I don't think there really are. Stanza might be the only one.
Well, yeah, if Stanza is, that would be one thing. But what I'm talking about are ebook readers where you go to a bookstore, you buy books. It'd be like us or Kindle or Kobo or any of those.
Okay.
No, nothing like that. The most would be something like Stanza that allows you to read a book that you've already purchased and downloaded.
I'm just going to say, and I don't know the reasons why. I'm just going to say that I'm pretty sure that the Mac, it's not that we're overlooking it. Obviously, we don't want to overlook it. Our goal is to be on every platform we can be on. I don't know the engineering reasons why Mac isn't at the top of our radar screen, but. But right now, it's PC, iOS, Android, in that order.
Okay, fair enough. Before we wrap up here in the next 3 minutes, I just want to talk about, of these 100,000, what's the general pricing? Is it all over the map? Like,
oh, God, it's all
Amazon
over the map.
Kindle?
I mean, I've seen books for $150, and I've seen books for, $4.99 or $2. Most of them I tend to see are in the $10 to $20 range. Right in that price range.
So when you say that you can't do it because of Apple restrictions, does that mean you literally cannot do it, or they just don't want to pay the 30% Apple tax?
Well, what we can't do that. The financial constraints simply wouldn't allow it.
Okay. Yeah,
we could, it's a question of can you stay in business?
Right. It's just a little too steep. Well, it's too steep of a cost, 30%.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we would lose money on every single book.
So your initial operation cost is just building the software and maintaining the store.
That's right. We would literally, Mike, lose money on every single book. And so that's a proposition we can't go into. Now, I don't know that apparently everybody else is telling Apple the same thing, too.
Well, that's a good thing. I think people should hold out to say, hey, you need to have more reasonable rates. And that's fair enough. I just wanted to ask that. But we've really come to the end of our half hour. I thank you for a very candid discussion, and we encourage folks to check it out. So you can just type in Blio from your iTunes, or what's the best way to...
The best way to do it is, you'll get there, but Blio Reader. So you just put in... the way I did it is I put in Blio, B-L-I-O space R-E-A-D-E-R, and the app came up.
Okay, because I typed Blio and nothing came up, so that's...
Yeah, I know, but do Blio space Reader.
Okay, very good. Well, I appreciate you for that info. We're going to move on to our general discussions of some of the convention highlights, and you're welcome to stay around if you like. And I know you have a thought or two on the first topic, so I'll do that first in case you need to skedaddle.
I'll do it. Yeah,
we're going to talk about the NFB convention. And again, I apologize. We really don't have much to talk about right now in terms of ACB. I was there. Of course, the resolutions, all that's voted on and summed up tomorrow. So there's not a lot to go there. I will say, first of all, that you can listen to interviews that have been conducted by Derek Lane and Joe Steinkamp at the NFB convention last week, as well as some that I did a few days ago at the American Council for the Blind convention. And you can do all that via SamNet Radio. That's the portal. And probably another 2 weeks, we will make all those available through the typical RSS channels. But we want people to start getting acclimated to using SamNet Radio as your source for audio information for the blind and low vision community. I guess I'm going to bring up the NFB convention page here, and let's just start with apparently the big issue, especially from the outside and from all I can tell on the inside as well, was two resolutions that were brought forth about Apple and what they felt Apple should do. Now, one of them passed and one of them did not. So, Jim, I'll let you start on that.
Okay. Well, let's see. The one that didn't pass was a resolution where we were criticizing, we actually used the term condemn and deplore, Apple for giving honors or recognition, high recognition, to apps at their annual WWDC conference, World Developer Conference, that they recognize apps as being, you know, having lots of merit, even though the apps they recognize are not accessible. And we certainly said they should not continue to do that. That one of the criteria for getting the level of recognition that they were getting was that the app should be accessible. Daryl was against that, and he could explain why. Maybe he just thought the language was a little bit too far
out. Yeah, Daryl, because my understanding was...
Hang on, Daryl. We did condemn and deplore them, and I think some people thought we were a bit strident on that point. But I just want to tell you this. What it taught me was there are a lot of people out there, blind people, who have drunk the Kool-Aid on Apple. Now, I have too. I'm an iPhone user. I have an iPod Touch. I'm about ready to buy an iPad. I bought my girlfriend an iPad. I've got two iPhones and an iPod Touch myself, and I'll get an iPad. The only thing I don't have is a Mac. All right, now, so I've really put more money into Apple than any of my other computers, I think. But I don't cry big tears when somebody says some bad things about Apple because, frankly, they didn't get religion about voiceover until the NFB was close to suing them. And then they decided to come around and become accessible. Now, nobody can say that they became accessible on their own. And so to say that we shouldn't then continue to push Apple, we might have used another word rather than condemn and deplore, but frankly, I can tell you they are a big company and they won't pay attention to you unless you make a stink about it.
Okay, I want to have Daryl comment, but let me, because my understanding was that this resolution actually asked that all apps be accessible, and so to me that was
a different resolution. This is the one about the recognition of meritorious apps.
Okay, I'll let Daryl take over and explain kind of, you know, what you were up against and why you raised such opposition.
Okay, well, I spoke on both of those, and that was the second of the two resolutions in the sequential order. But I had just gotten back to my seat and sat down, and then I started hearing the language of this resolution, and you should have seen me. I told my friend, oh, I got to run, and I actually knocked something over and ran for the microphones. I was just absolutely appalled that we would do this. And I think, you know, Jim, you're right. The trouble I had was this, the strength of the language. I felt that was a little too far. I thought if we wanted to say something about, you know, if we wanted to ask Apple to include accessibility as a requirement for WWDC recognition, then that would have been a beautiful resolution. But I thought the language was too strident. And I also felt on both resolutions, we can talk about the other one hopefully separately. I thought that on both resolutions, I felt a little bit, why are we spending so much time on Apple when they are, at least, you know, they're doing quite a bit for us. They're doing quite a bit in the area of accessibility. Why are we spending all this time on Apple and instead of, you know, Microsoft, Google, something like that where, boy, we have some pretty serious issues right now. Not that we don't have any issues with Apple. That's not what I'm saying, and I don't feel like this is anything about drinking Apple Kool-Aid or anything like that, because we do need to be vigilant. But, man, the resolutions, I just felt like they were over the top. And I would also like to say one more thing. Although I think that – although I do think there could be some ways to – make sure the resolution debate process, you know, is a little more than just first come, first serve, and reflects all sides. I felt like that the way these particular resolutions were handled, I think that a lot of people got to speak out on both sides. And I do not, you know, my attitude is you win some and lose some. Better luck next year.
Okay, I'm just trying to understand the difference between the two resolutions. One specifically asked that Apple make all apps accessible, mandate that.
The first one, and look, I can speak to this too. Apple has developer guidelines, and they can enforce those guidelines. In fact, they do enforce those guidelines. That's why our welcome page is the way it is. So I can tell you, you don't get in the App Store unless you abide by the Apple guidelines. Okay, well, they choose to enforce and use the word enforce here, some guidelines, and they choose to ignore others. And they don't enforce any guideline relative to accessibility. And I know that you can't make every app accessible. Some apps are inherently visual and can't work with VoiceOver. You can't make a picture talk, but you certainly can enforce an accessibility standard on apps, and you can make it a flexible enough standard that it's a realistic standard. And to vote no on a resolution like that is to vote against accessibility, and I don't know why Daryl would even consider doing such a thing, either on the first or the second resolution. It makes all of his comments, and it makes all of his comments in my mind somewhat disingenuous about Blio, because many of the issues raised about Blio are issues that we face also because of Apple's restrictions.
Totally different things.
Not to me.
Well, they are, though. If you're saying understand that all apps can't be accessible, but you're saying, yeah, we need to endorse this to support this.
Well, what they should do is enforce an accessibility guideline. If they can keep us out of the App Store for not complying with some particular guideline, which they can, then they can keep other apps. They let book readers into the App Store that are not accessible. I've bought books through Amazon on the iPhone, and I can't read any of them.
Well, fair enough. I want to give Daryl a chance to comment. Certainly, I mean that was you mentioned him specifically, so.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I got quite a bit of grief from all this. I even got called an idiot behind my back to my state president from somebody high up in my state affiliate, which wasn't very nice. So I'm definitely, I guess, paying for this stance for sure. But hey, that's fine. I'm glad that I was able to speak out on both resolutions. I feel like that my stance is realistic based on the knowledge that I feel I have on the ground about iOS. I've been doing a lot with iOS for a while. I really care about iOS stuff. I think it has the most potential for, you know, smartphone accessibility right now over other things like Android. But hey, we have to live in reality, and we have to be careful what we ask for or insist upon. So Apple has, you know, one thing that they do is accessibility, and it's awesome, and we want to encourage Apple to do more of it. However, Apple has other priorities. We're not the top priority. Apple has to compete with Android. You know, they have to provide a better user experience than Android for sighted people and for blind people, too. They already provide a way better user experience for blind people, so what do we want there? So they have to do that. They have all of these different factors. Apple is not... You guys, it's just not realistic. Apple's not going to go through every app, 350,000 some apps in the App Store, if not more. They're not going to go through every app and say, is it accessible? And if not, we're going to toss it out or we're going to put it through some extensive review process. It's not, and the review process is already bad enough, you know, bad enough the way it is. So I just don't like, you know, resolutions become Federation policy. And I just hate to see us put resolutions on our books that are not realistic and they're not going to happen. It's not going to happen, so why do it? And had we talked about asking Apple to put an accessibility rating in the iTunes store or to do something that might encourage developers to be accessible, fine, I could go for that. And you know what? This is my solemn promise from here on out. I posted this publicly on Twitter also. For every convention that I go to from now on, I promise I will be attending the Resolutions Committee meeting.
Right on. And you made very good points about we need to be concerned about Google and Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft teaming up with Symbian and the Windows Mobile 8. You know, we don't have accessibility to these technologies. We can't go, oh, we got iOS. And most folks are smart enough to figure out.
And we're ragging on iOS, though.
Right. So, I want to ask Steve to comment on Google, because you said that Google did make a promise there to make Google Apps accessible.
Well, they did. I also spoke out against the two Apple resolutions, and I'm really glad Daryl did as well, and the others who did. Fantastic. I watched them fly right through the Resolutions Committee. I was sort of scared to watch it because there was not even any discussion on the resolutions when they were in committee. I'm not on the committee, so I watched it as a spectator, as it were. But scary stuff, and I don't know. I have a lot of issues with both of them. I think Apple can do a lot with regard to accessibility and perhaps come up with some sort of guideline. But the other reality is there are applications that are designed to be visual, that by their very nature are designed to be inaccessible. I'm thinking, for example, of like a drawing application that my daughter uses or game applications that my son plays, things like that. These are designed to be visual and don't have buttons and objects that are in any way static. And boy, what a difficult thing it would be, especially as they're trying to tout this as a game machine. But anyway, as Daryl mentioned, something to work on for next year. The resolutions do dictate policy, but like everything, policy can change, and I think it's something we really need to work toward. But Google has also apparently seen the light. They have promised to make Google Apps accessible by the end of the year. Now, the Google Apps are not all of the services that Google offers. The Google Apps Suite, which is oftentimes used by universities, organizations, I suppose some end users use it. I actually do, although I'm sure I'm way in the minority there. But it does consist of things like the Gmail interface, Google Voice, Google, what else is in there? Gosh, I can't think of it. Google Gcal.
Google Docs.
Google Docs is a biggie.
Yeah, that's going to be the big one. That's been the big problem. Anyway, there's a suite of applications, and they all have their accessibility issues. They are, in many respects, usable. I realize that's very vague, and it does vary from app to app. But they made this sweeping promise that by the end of the year, they would all be accessible. I can't wait to see it happen. I hope that it does. It's a pretty big promise to make, given the current state of those applications. But hopefully, by next year, we'll be able to talk about accessible Google Apps.
This is Jim Gashel. What I was trying to point out to Daryl and two of the rest of our users is, you know, Google didn't get religion, just like Apple. Apple didn't get religion just because they woke up one day and decided to be nice to the blind. The NFB was circling around ready to sue them. The NFB filed a whole passel of complaints with the Justice Department against institutions that of higher ed that use Google Apps. And so that's all of a sudden Google's going to make everything accessible by the beginning of this school year, they said. Well, so it isn't – we don't get anything out of these large companies in the range of accessibility by just sticking out our hand and say, please, won't you do it?
I think you're overestimating the influence and power of NFB, quite frankly, Jim.
Well, then you tell me how it would have happened otherwise, because it hadn't happened.
Okay, I think once in a while there's concern about risk and there's concern about us suing and filing complaints. Yes, I see your point as far as it goes. But I think more importantly, what we do is raise awareness. I sometimes think that we don't escalate well, that I think these processes need to be ones of escalation. I think we need to do more structured negotiation. I mean, okay, so come on, with Google, why is it that Google was not, okay, Google gave a 20-minute speech at NFB. That was it. No focus groups, nothing that they did at CSUN, nothing that they've just finished doing at ACB this year. They like ACB. They don't like us. Why don't they like us? I'm wondering if it isn't because we're sitting there trying to say, we're going to sue. We're going to sue you.
It's not a question of like. The person that came to the NFB convention was the head of their knowledge group. That's very high level in Google. And all of the people that were at the ACB's convention were unable to get his attention to address these issues until the NFB got about and filed the complaints that I mentioned. And then all of a sudden, this guy's meeting with us when we asked to meet with higher-ups at Google for year after year after year, and they wouldn't do it. And so it took legal action to get it done. And all of the people that met at the ACB convention, even though they work for the company, couldn't get it done.
Well, I think that they've...
And those are facts, Daryl. Those are just plain facts.
I guess we'll have to agree to disagree, because I see that ACB in this area is getting along a lot further than NFB. Now, in other things, you know, and other things in ahead, I guess, you know what? I guess I wish we could find some way on some of these sticky accessibility issues to work together constructively. Boy, wouldn't that be great, folks?
Yeah, there are times when unity certainly would help. I want to ask Steve, because I know you attended quite a few meetings and were tweeting here and there about some other issues beyond these that you observed at the convention this year.
Well, the one big one, which ironically Google did not address that much during their 20-minute presentation to the convention, is Android and accessibility of Android. I mean, they made reference to it, but not really in a very specific way. Certainly not like they have the Google Apps Suite. But Android was a pretty hot topic this year at the NFB convention, and what I find most interesting about that is the fact that it was not at all a topic last year, or vaguely maybe a topic at last year's convention. So in the space of a year, we've gone from, I don't want to say obscurity, but pretty darn close to it, at least where the convention was concerned, to having it be a pretty hot topic in various areas. At the computer science division, Code Factory demonstrated or talked about the new update to mobile accessibility. They prophesied that it would be released mid or end of July. It was actually released yesterday. They also talked about a new standalone browser that they're going to make available for $19.95, and I don't know if that's available yet or not, but it is coming soon. Also, a music player is coming soon. So they're doing a lot of work. The other company that presented is Levelstar. They are developing a new Android-based note taker in partnership with APH. In Levelstar's case, it's called the Orion. I think my Mac calls it the Orion, but
yeah,
whatever.
Orion,
it's
yeah.
The Orion.
Orion,
it's the Orion.
And so we couldn't get a real answer about price, other than they said under $4,000. So what are we going to say, $39.95? I mean, but it's for an 18 cell.
It's always hard to guess at these things. I did ask the question because I saw this actually on the exhibit floor and did a quick audio podcast about it. Basically, my very quick first impressions, given that I only had a few seconds and a lot of people in line behind me. And I asked about the price, and they said, yeah, around $4,000, which is interesting because it does put it in a comparable position to other Braille note takers. But the criticism out there is, and we see this also with Apple products, is that, geez, why would you pay this much when you can get a standard off-the-shelf Android device and a Braille display, put them together, and still save a bunch of money? So it is going to be interesting to see how this works. They do say that they've made the browser accessible. They've really kind of hooked into the underlying Android operating system and manipulated it in a way to add a lot more accessibility than what's present by default or what Google currently makes available through its API interfaces.
Well, clarify, because I didn't even think there was good Braille support, full Braille support in Android.
I found that very interesting because I asked the Code Factory rep when we might see Braille support for Android, and she indicated that it's not possible, really, given the APIs, the accessibility APIs offered by Google. They really can't make Braille input and output a reality. They're working on it because they'd like to make it happen, but they just couldn't. And then, of course, right after that came Levelstar, and they've, of course, done it. So I don't know if they've
reinvented the wheel
or what they did.
Well, I can add to that. Getting back to what Jim was talking about earlier about developers and what you can and can't do to be quote-unquote official with apps, there are limitations within Google on what you can do with Android development. And what is being proposed by the Orion Group is that they're doing some things that would allow them to get to portions of Android that would not necessarily mean that you could jump into the Android market or call yourself a Android Google app. By that, I mean there are some rules within development to be able to get to the store, to be able to use Gmail in a certain way. And I don't want to go too technical here, but what they're doing, it might not necessarily get the quote-unquote Google approval level sticker on the device. And you see that in Windows Mobile. You have that in iOS. That isn't anything unique to Google. But when you don't develop your program to fit a certain way, or if you design it to allow you to get to something that isn't necessarily falling completely within developer guidelines, then you run the risk of not being able to, you know, throw up there the Google label. And that's not a killer thing. I mean, that's not necessarily an awful thing. Certainly those who are using Cyanogen Mod or any of the other mods, there are lots of app stores out there. There's the Amazon App Store that you actually have to sideload to be able to get some stuff. So it's not a make or break. I'm sure they're probably working with Google right now to try and find some mediation point in there to get to some of the more Google-flavored stuff or to be able to have the Google label. But Keysoft sits on top of Windows Mobile. So it's again, not something horrible. It's just something that they might not be willing to disclose at this time or that they can even disclose at this time.
Having said all that, though, it's a really nice-looking device, assuming they don't modify it too much before they release it.
Yeah, but do you want your cell phone to be that big?
No, but I would love, I tell you, for conventions, it would be great to have a small note taker.
It is
like
a pretty
that.
Small I've, device. It is a well-designed, at least the prototype.
Well, anybody who used the MPO realizes that it is a little smaller. That's the old Alva first generation Braille display on a phone. And that thing was like the size of a giant walkie-talkie from Sears and Roebuck or Tandy. So, and it could be just more than that. It could be also the ability to do, you know, data as well as the phone. And, you know, while you've already got it there, you might as well just have it there. Because sometimes what happens is if you don't do something, then people go, well, why didn't you do it? You already had done like 50% of it. It just seems kind of, you know, realistic that you went ahead and go all the way. So I'm kind of glad that it is there.
Yeah, I just my issue is still the price point. I mean, we got 18 cells coming in now. Well, I guess that's 12 cells for a grand, but I mean, my issue is the price point. It's a company, and they say we got a limited market, and we got to recover.
Hey, if only
costs.
iSense was a reality.
Right, and there's still ice cream sandwich and some changes in Android coming with the open accessory API, not accessibility, but open accessory.
Well, and Cyanogen, I mean that mm-hmm. to the right minds could open up a wealth of opportunities to improve
accessibility. And like Steve said, it's changed so much in a year. There were a lot of people talking Android this year, Learning Ally, Bookshare, NLS. It did seem to be one of the trends that was coming from the floor was that many people were talking about having an Android component to what they offer. And I think that's really important because Android makes up 50% of the cell phone market these days as of the time of this recording. So it's important that that's out there.
I got so excited I forgot to enable questions, so I just did that. So if you wondered, you know, a question, please submit it quickly. The other thing as far as the products, I guess HIMS made themselves maybe stand out by enabling voice commands on the BookSense XT. And Steve, I think you have one there, but you haven't really played with it yet. But like 100 commands, voice commands, so that might be nice, even though you can't like load a book and then have it find text in the book or the title or anything. You can at least use your voice to navigate it. So maybe you can do dishes or do something where you need your hands for other functionality. So maybe that'll make the BookSense XT enticing to folks. I don't know if
that's really
out to the masses, though, right?
I don't know if it's officially released or not.
I think I heard that it isn't. It isn't yet, but it will be this fall. I think.
Yeah, it's coming soon, and it's impressive.
I mean, I'm not sure if I see the point. I guess it's a convenience thing, but I didn't get any pricing on that. How much more is it going to cost for that?
Free.
It's free. It's included, but you have to have the XT, which costs more, right? $499.
Right. $359. Oh, yeah. See, I didn't know it was free. If it's included, it's worth it. And wow.
Well, I think this for people that have mobility issues or people who are older. Yeah. This is a godsend. I think especially for students that might want to read a lot of Learning Ally books, but again, have motor disability type issues. This is perfect for people who, like me, are often reading while doing dishes or laundry or have something in their hands or cooking or whatever and don't want to get grease all over the BookSense trying to pause it.
Well,
in that case, I guess it's convenience. But there are roughly 100 commands, and you can navigate within books, including choosing heading levels and navigating. You can navigate between books. You can change between all of the various types of files, books, media, NLS, DAISY, Learning Ally, etc. So there's actually quite a lot of commands. You can even shut the thing off or get into the dialogue that lets you set the alarm right with voice commands. So it really is neat. You don't have to press any key to make it work. You start your command by saying the word BookSense, and that's sort of its wake up or trigger, and then you follow that with the actual command you want. And it's pretty darn neat. And, of course, you can't beat the price. You do have to have the XT, but it's free. And whenever it's available, it's just there. So really kind of a neat, innovative sort of thing.
I'm curious to see how well it works with different voices and environments and things. Always a test of voice recognition.
And how much space does it take up on your 4 gigs on your XT is what I'm wondering as well. That I have an XT as well, and that's what I'm curious about is how much internal flash does it take up. But again, like everybody has said, it's free, so can't go wrong with the price point, that's for sure.
No, not at all. And so those were the big ones. I mean, GW Micro announced, of course, Joe interviewed him, but this was announced afterward that they have the Read It Wand. They're claiming the first accessible camera that you actually can use with touchscreen capabilities. We do have a question here. Let's see what that is. We're just about out of time. Okay. Keith asks about the hotel in Orlando, if it was better than your situation in Detroit. But
It was not round. That's important.
I thought Dallas was a bigger issue than Detroit. Detroit was kind of weird. I remember.
Yeah, Detroit was GM, and you know what's really funny is NFB convention has a lot of cool memories for me because when I was in Philadelphia, it was during the anniversary of the Liberty Bell, and I tried to get out of Philadelphia, and George Bush had blocked up all the ways to get out. And when we were in Detroit, it was the 50th anniversary of Motown. It was the death of Michael Jackson. And it was held in the hotel that was GM's headquarters while they were being liquidated. So the cool thing about Orlando was that that was actually the hotel where the Anthony trial was sequestered, the jury.
Yeah.
And so there was lots of people walking around who were highway patrol officers. There were helicopters. There was media. And also there was a 1,500-member convention of a German dance troupe. So there were people walking around like in lederhosen and dressed up like Valkyries. So there was a lot of other extracurricular activity going on at that particular hotel, and it's going to be there again, maybe not at that particular hotel, but it's going to be in Orlando again on 2013, 2015, and 2017. I don't know if we'll have the same extracurricular activities, but it was a nice hotel. The what I think is really cool is the lighting went out in the exhibit hall like twice, so it was a great way of getting other people to experience what we experience, or at least that's the way I viewed it. What did you guys think of the Brilliant? Did you get to touch the new Brilliant from Humanware?
I thought it was cool. I drooled over it a bit. It's a neat device.
I didn't get to touch it. A friend of mine did, and she really, really loved it, but I unfortunately didn't. I guess it's really small. It's really compact.
It's very flat.
And it has a keyboard, right? And it works with Bluetooth and iOS and all that stuff too.
Right. On the 32 and the 40, you have Braille input. On the 80, it's more of a read-only kind of situation. Yeah. Because they're thinking that mostly you're reading than inputting on that. And I believe the price point for the 40 is going to come in at $29.99 to start.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And they do have it working. It's an HID-compliant device, so it should work with everyone. But they've also worked with Freedom Scientific to make sure it really works with JAWS 12. They had mentioned that during the conversation, as well as, one of the great things about Humanware and Kurzweil and some other companies is they do their meetings outside of the exhibit hall. And, the Victor Reader Stratus was there for Humanware. There was also Kurzweil announcing that they're working with the HoverCam. There was some other little, interesting tidbits other than GW Micro giving away cowbells. They gave away yo-yos last year. I commend those cats for thinking of things that are loud and noisy that you can recognize on the floor.
Yes, indeed. That's pretty much brought us to the end of our hour. I do want to invite folks, assuming it is released next week, we're going to talk about Lion.
Yay!
We're ready to play around with that.
Roar!
And Steve, you're certainly welcome to join us with that. If you've been, I know you can't say publicly, but if you've been playing around with the beta or anything, but we're going to talk about Lion next week. And of course, in 2 weeks on the 28th, we'll do our This Month in Access Tech. And this month, it's the females. We're going to get a female perspective by bringing all ladies. Yeah, so we'll see how that kind of changes the dynamics of it. Yeah, it should be great. So,
Michael in the Fembots, I believe, is the code name for that particular bot.
I'm actually sitting on the side. I will play engineer and let Ricky MC that. MC Ricky.
Yay.
Can't
wait.
Yeah, that'll be great. And we want to try some different groups. We had great success with the folks from the UK and Ireland, and we'll try Australia, Canada, females. I don't know.
But the tech chat does continue. If you want to jump on over to Samnet, go over to SA2Go. That's www.satogo.com. If you don't have System Access Mobile Network, you can come try a 7-day trial and jump into the voice chat. We'll be in the tech room, and we'll continue on this conversation with our friends over in Samnet if you're interested.
Yes, indeed. So with that, we're going to put the wraps on. I thank all of you, Jim Gashel.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yes, Daryl Shandro and Steve Sawson, who didn't get to say too much tonight, but
he was a loudmouth. Did you hear how he kept breaking in?
I know. He was just so rude, so interrupting everyone.
I know.
And Steve, you're welcome anytime, buddy. You always have a lot of great information to provide. But so join us again next week. And, of course, our podcast will be coming out soon, around the 18th or so. So as we always say, until we meet again, let's stay connected and stay directed. Yes, sir.
This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.